Hey, Meat.
Hey, Ronj.
Are you there? Oh, there you are.
Huh? Can you hear me?
Yeah,
can
you
hear me now?
You.
Good.
What are we fighting over today?
We've got some Cardinals tickets. On Friday, August 9th, the Cardinals will host the Pirates. That day, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older will take home a Cardinals tank top for their wardrobe, courtesy of Cooper Tires and Dobbs Tire and Auto Center. Get your tickets now at cardinals.com/promotions.
That sounds like a terrific prize.
Absolutely. It's Cardinals tickets. How can you beat that?
Well, you can't.
Exactly. We also want to hear from the people, Ronj.
Oh.
We got a mic drop coming up.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you believe the little hot streak the Cardinals are on right now? 7-3 since the All-Star break. Is it real?
Or are they teasing you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think the Cardinals are teasing us?
It's not great competition. You got to beat them all. I don't know. We want to hear from you. Leave us a mic drop on the 101 ESPN app.
See.
Right meow.
I think that's fair. That is 100% fair. Is what they are doing now, is this a sign of things to come over the next 2 months? Or are they just building you up so they can rip your heart out in a couple of weeks? That's a great question. So
Thank
send
you.
Us a mic drop.
Thank you, Ronj.
Good job. Meet the 101 ESPN app. If you haven't downloaded it, what's the matter with you? Do that and send us a mic drop. Our fighter this afternoon is Blake.
Yeah.
Hey, Blake.
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know. Hey, you tell me. What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot, just hanging out. I want to give a shout-out to my boys Garrett, Zach, Luke, Retod, and Monkey, my boys Braylon and Damon, and I want to also drop a little dime on you. I recorded 75 solo tackles my senior year of 1998 when we won the MVC championship. Just letting you know.
Oh, my Whoa. God. Woo. Congratulations.
Yeah, no big deal.
Hey,
this guy's
look
a gamer.
At you. This is and I bet you've bought a waterbed without financing, haven't you?
If yeah, you got, two of them actually.
If you haven't followed 3-year Letterman on Twitter, you should do it because he's hysterical. Anyway, that's
I'm
his
check that out.
That's his bit, is that he's really proud of what he did in high school and he lettered for 3 years and he can
yeah,
afford a waterbed. He's he trolls everybody. He's like Al
nice.
Bundy going to Polk High. Talking about his glory days. Are you ready to fight?
I'm ready to fight the fanboy.
All right, man. Blake, I'm going to tell you something right now. I am rooting for you.
All right. Me too. Thank you for that.
You got it, buddy. All right, let's go. Question number one. Lee Smith was inducted into the Hall of Fame over the weekend. The most saves he had with one team was 180. What team was that? Was it the Cardinals, the Cubs, or the Red Sox?
First, I want to drop that. I'm really disappointed Lee Smith wore a Cubs jersey to the Hall of Fame. Screw him. And I will go with the Cardinals.
Friend of the show, by the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, friend of the show. But he did play a lot more years with the Cubs.
Cool well,
Cardinals, yeah.
Question number two, Balake. The Wizards are reportedly offering Bradley Beal a 3-year, $111 million contract extension. Beal was drafted third overall in the 2012 NBA draft. Who went first in that draft? Was it Kyrie Irving, Anthony Bennett, or Anthony Davis?
Ooh, we'll go Kyrie.
Question number three. Who was the last Pirates pitcher with a 20-win season? Was it Ian Snell, John Smiley, or A.J. Burnett?
I don't think any Pirates pitcher has ever won 20 games, but I'm going to guess A.J. Burnett.
I thought the exact same thing. I go, this has happened?
Yeah. Took me a while to find that one. Question number four, Blake. On this date in 1997, which pitcher threw a complete game in just 77 pitches? Was it Greg Maddux, Roger Clemens, or Pedro Martinez?
Oh, my gosh. Pull this one out of the hat. We'll say Pedro stomp.
All
Pedro
right.
Martinez.
You're going with Pedro?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's bring in Randall. Blake, I need you to tell me how you feel.
Not good, because Randy's a beast.
Is it because of Randy or because of your own performance?
Probably because of my own performance.
That's all right, man. Let me ask you this question. If you do poorly today, or if you have done poorly when we find out the results, are all those people you named for us going to chastise you?
Several. Yeah.
Good. Well, I hope you're able to weather that storm. Randy, say hello to Blake.
Balake, how you doing?
What's up, Randy? Take it easy on me now.
He wanted to go to war with you, Randy, and I got to tell you, I was rooting for him.
I like it. That's good.
All right. So here we go. Are you ready?
Yes.
Question one. Lee Smith, he's in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah.
Most saves he had with one team was 180. Mm. What team was that?
I believe it was the Chicago Cubs.
Question number two, Randy. As we mentioned earlier, the Wizards are reportedly offering Bradley Beal a three-year, $111 million extension. He was drafted third overall in 2012. Who went first in that draft?
Let's see. 13, 14, 15, 17. I believe that would have been Anthony Davis.
Question number three. Who was the last Pirates pitcher with a 20-win season?
Oh, wow. But this was a while ago. And I will use the lifeline here.
Is it Ian Snell, John Smiley, A.J. Burnett?
I don't think Snell got to 20. Burnett may have for them. But I think I'm going to go with the old lefty John Smiley, number 57.
And question number four, Randy, on this date in 1997, which pitcher threw a complete game in just 77 pitches?
Wow. What year?
1997.
The logical one's going to be Greg Maddux. I'll go with him.
We have a winner. Blake, I have to be honest with you, man. This was not your day. Oh my God, it was bad. 4-0. This is what they call a beating. And Randy administered that beating to you. He gets all four. You get zero. It was the Cubs with which Lee Smith threw or had 180 saves. Anthony Davis was drafted third overall in 2012, or he was drafted first overall. Bradley Beal drafted third. John Smiley in 1991, a 20-win season for the Pirates. And it was Greg Maddux. Back in 1997, a complete game in 77 pitches, 63 total strikes. He had 6 strikeouts. He never got into a 3-ball count in that when he was pitching for the Braves. And actually happened to see a video of him today in the movement. And we all know about the Greg Maddux movement on some of those pitches. And he's throwing like 86. Just, I don't know how you did it. And I'm telling you, Blake, I feel like most of those hitters that day felt the way you felt today against Randy.
Yes, I'm feeling it as well.
Blake, thanks very much for playing.
I'm going to continue on my sports six-pack.
We appreciate it. Blake with us on 101 ESPN, where it's 4:11. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. The Blues still have tickets available for their movie premiere Sunday night, the 28th, July 28th at 5 o'clock at the Stiefel Theater. From last in the NHL to Stanley Cup champions, you can relive the historic Blues 2018-19 season at this exclusive event. And you can get tickets. They're available in sets, and you can get a maximum of 8. And if you just go to stlblues.com, you can buy tickets there. So if you want to get there on Sunday night, you should. STLBlues.com, or you can follow the Blues on Twitter, on Instagram, and you'll be able to go to the link there, too.
And speaking of the Blues, I'm not sure we mentioned during Hot Topics, I don't know if we did or not, the Oscar Sundquist, four-year, $2.75 million contract
for
with the
year.
Blues.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so that gives them a little bit of wiggle room. Still have to get Barbashev under contract and Joel Edmondson, and then they'll be able to determine whether or not they can spend enough to bring Pat Maroon back.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this might be it, don't you think?
Yeah. But what an awesome job he did with the Cup this weekend here in St. Louis. What a great St. Louisan, and what wonderful things he's doing for our community with the Stanley Cup. Next up in the fast lane. Hey, do you feel like the Cardinals have turned things around 7-3 since the break and still in the playoff hunt? We'd like to hear from you with the 101 ESPN app and the mic drop. Use the mic drop feature and tell us what you think of the Cardinals. Are they going to be a playoff team, or are they just toast?
Are they teasing us?
It's a good
question. Do you think the Cardinals are teasing us? I hope not.
Me too. You are next on 101 ESPN. Got to let that get that glory in there.
Well,
that was Charles, by the way, on 101 ESPN.
Charles, I think they need their own song. But if it gets you going, whatever's good for you and your home and making you feel right.
I don't believe that this Cardinal team has provided us enough information to really define them. I don't know if they're I know they aren't bad, but I don't know if they're good or mediocre.
Maybe that is their definition.
That might
be that they're such. You don't have to necessarily be good, bad, or mediocre. You can be in between those three things.
Yeah.
So they could be somewhere between good and mediocre. That's maybe they're above average.
But I do think their talent is good. You look at the way the starting pitching has performed for the most part over the last month or so. When you look at the baseball card numbers of the offensive players when they're in there, granted they've played better without Carpenter of late, but I do think that the talent is there. But for whatever reason, this is a club that has had trouble putting things together. And I think that's an issue in all of baseball, really. There are some teams that, Dodgers, Yankees, that just put everything together. But there are a lot of teams that, man, it takes until July, August, September to put things together.
It took the Dodgers that long last year.
Yeah.
And you can look at the Washington Nationals, who have had a really good roster for several years now. And they've got a couple of years in there when they were just, they were mm-hmm. above average. And that's possible. That's where the Cardinals are going to end up. The problem with this team is I still, even though they're playing great, I am rooting for this. I am hoping they do something that for me would be kind of unexpected because I didn't know what to think of them going into the season. I didn't have high hopes for them. But even though they had that April, or because they had that April, and then followed it up with what they did in May and June, I have a difficult time looking at these last 10 days or so and thinking, yep, this is it.
Yeah, me too.
They've arrived now.
It's going to take a month of this for me.
Well, and even a month of it, I'm not sure, because they did it for a month in April.
Yeah.
So they could very easily do this again for a month and then show us May. I mean, I don't.
They're capable.
Yeah. Right. So I don't really know. Maybe this is just what they are.
Let's get to Mike on 101 ESPN with the mic drop feature.
I mean, I'm a diehard Cardinals fan, and I hate to say this. I feel like it's a mirage. I mean, how many times over the weekend and through last week did we have guys on third base with no outs or one out, and we couldn't bring them in? I mean, you can't do that. You have got to bring that guy in, and we're not. We're really just getting lucky right now.
That's a great point, and I wish I don't see enough other teams to know how prevalent this is. I have to believe that with the proliferation of strikeouts, that this is a problem that is bigger than just here in St. Louis. But yes, it's inexcusable to have runners at third and nobody out and not get the run home.
Well, look at what the Reds just did yesterday. And we talked about it. They had the bases loaded, nobody out. Mm-hmm. I believe the number is if you load up the bases with nobody out, there's something like an 80% or 85% run expectancy that you're at least going to get one. And I know that's just the Reds, and they're not a great team, and I don't expect them. They're seven games out of a wild card right now. That's kind of what I thought they would end up doing. I didn't really think they were going to actually compete for a playoff spot.
One of the hitters was Joey Votto, though.
That's true.
So that percentage should go up when he's one of your hitters.
You're right. But speaking of Joey Votto, and this is kind of a sidebar, I think it's really unfortunate they're not going to be able to put him on a winner. It would be nice mm-hmm. if his contract was in such a way that it was movable, that some team would like to take him on for a year or two. But he signed for, I think, through 2024
mm-hmm.
or 2025.
And Cabrera can't play anymore. Votto
right.
can still hit.
Right.
But it's a shame that neither of those two are going to get that world championship.
Exactly. It'd be nice to put him to a contender and let him get that opportunity. But without going back and looking at the numbers, or I haven't done it yet, I don't know what the Cardinals are with runners in scoring position. I know that for a while they were not good. And that includes May, that includes June. They were pretty good at it in April. But overall, they're just not great in that area. So I understand having those concerns.
Next up is Wes on 101 ESPN.
I think that come October and November, St. Louis is going to be chanting, "We went Cardinals."
All right. So he's convinced.
Maybe. You know, he might be right.
Yeah.
Gosh, please give me that. Yeah. Who would the Cardinals, Brett Hull, be?
Oh, man. I don't think
they have one.
Danny Cox?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We went over this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And by the way, I need to clarify. Votto was one of the people on base when they had the bases loaded and nobody out. Puig popped out. Van Meter struck out. Jeanette struck out. So I was incorrect there.
Did he not at one point, though? Wasn't he up with the bases loaded?
He was up with a runner.
Or something,
he was up, yeah.
Okay.
At some point during the weekend, he was up.
Right.
And he, I know he popped foul and then he made it out.
Yes.
Wes is next on 101 ESPN. Oh, no, that was Wes.
I'm not surprised the Cardinals are playing good baseball now. They tend to play really good baseball in July and August and then cool down in September when we need the push. But I don't know if this is an accurate representation of the quality of this team. I think that they're going to have to make some moves, and them playing good right now is only going to have Mo say, "I believe in this team again."
They're a warm weather team. That was Jason.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I feel like I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Wait till the weather warms up.
I know Mo does believe in this team, and I can understand why he believes in this team. Because I don't know why. Well, I know why they're mediocre, but I don't know how they got to being mediocre, because that should not be the case. I think all of us that objectively watch the team figure that Goldschmidt should be a lot better. Granted, they lost Ozuna. Paul DeJong is what he is, but he's a guy that at some point you can win with. I think they have a group of players that you can win with, but they aren't playing, for the most part, they haven't played championship-quality baseball. Winning baseball, yes, they've got a winning record, but not championship-quality ball yet.
Well, that's kind of what I thought their ceiling was going to be, was a team that's above average and would compete for a playoff spot and maybe find their way into the postseason. But I did not look at them going into the year saying, oh, yeah, they're totally on par with the Cubs and they're on par with the Dodgers and the Braves. I just didn't think that. I thought they caught up a little bit with what they did during the offseason, and they had a pretty good offseason, but they probably needed to do a little bit more. And I know people are going to say, well, they got Goldschmidt. What more do you expect? Well, look at the teams they're competing with. Look at the team in the division, what they have. They've got an MVP. The Brewers have an MVP on their team. The Cubs have two MVPs on their team in their lineup. So that's what I was wanting them to do, was catch up with those other two teams and where they are. But I think they got better. I just don't know that they got good enough.
And if the Cardinals, it's pretty clear now, isn't it? If the Cardinals are going to get that player, that MVP, that stud star player, that guy's not coming from the outside. That guy's got to come from, and whether it's, he's going to come from the system, and whether that winds up being Dylan Carlson or Nolan Gorman down the line, the Cardinals are not going to go out and spend to get that guy that you're talking about.
Which is unfortunate, because they were willing to do it with Giancarlo Stanton.
They were.
They showed within the last year and a half they were willing to do it. And I wish they would have been more willing to do it last year. And we talked a lot about Harper and Machado, and you can have the argument over which one is better. I still thought Machado was the best of the two. But think about if you have him on this team playing third base all year. This team is a lot better. Maybe they're in first place.
Yeah, it'd be great.
You know, and I know they don't want to spend that money, or they prefer not to, but if you're trying to make up ground with all the other teams in the division and the National League, forget the division, you got to think in terms of where they stack up against the Dodgers.
Right. Yeah. And you look at the Dodgers and you coming into the season, you say, okay, who's their MVP? And all of a sudden, Bellinger bounces back and he's great again.
Right.
And they're getting great work out of Jock Peterson, and Turner is what Turner is. And they get an amazing start out of Hyunjin Ryu. It's not guys that you would have figured that would be leading the Dodgers.
And you also have to get some unexpected performance. And the Cardinals are getting a little bit of that right now, which is why they've been on this tear in the last nine games. But it's about whether or not they keep it up.
Yep. A couple of texts, both from the 314. One listener pointing out correctly that Miguel Cabrera did have that title as a rookie with the 03 Marlins. And also from the 314, the statistic apparently official, the Cardinals are 45% with a man on third and less than two out.
They are with runners in scoring position in the National League, hitting .257, which puts them 12th. The Cubs, Marlins, and Brewers are worse.
How about
believe
that?
Believe it or not.
That is amazing. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That is Ronj. I am Randy. BT out this week. He's got the Cardinals in Pittsburgh tonight. He'll be with Danny Mac. Next up, the Redbirds turning to many new faces as the season goes on. We're going to talk about that and others that could add some production with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. He's next on 101 ESPN. Brad Thompson is out this week. He's with the Cardinals in Pittsburgh. So it's Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you. And we get a chance to talk a little bit about the Cardinal system with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. He's with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Brian, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Randy. Thanks for having me on.
I want to start with this because a lot of people, I know they ask you the question, and you've researched this. What has happened to AAA this year? Obviously, a lot of people called up, but the Cardinal AAA team was so dominant for a couple of years. What's happened to Memphis?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Randy. I had all along said, hey, this is a reflection of the fact that the Cardinals had made a bet on position players and really hadn't got invested in the pitching like they needed to the last 3 years or so. But reality, when I got into the data, I learned that Memphis has been clobbered by injuries. And I knew they had a lot of guys on the injured list, but the number of player days, player games missed this year so far this season, and we're only, 70% through the season, is more than the last 2 years put together. So, yeah, maybe the talent's down a little bit. Certainly Memphis had a lot of problems in the bullpen, but anytime you have that many injuries, more than the last 2 years put together, that's going to be a factor in a team that's disappointing, playing 400 ball right now.
So it's not so much, at least in your mind, it's not so much an indication of there not being enough talent down there. It's just they don't have enough of it available to them.
Well, I think it's a little of both. I mean, we're not reading about guys that are like the next Jack Flaherty, next Dakota Hudson, who is, pitcher of the year in both AA and AAA. But again, I mean, you look at the guys who you expected maybe would have been the leaders of the starting rotation in Memphis, and they're injured. Alex Reyes, maybe he would have been with St. Louis. Austin Gomber, Ponce de Leon got called up. And the guys that have filled in behind them just aren't the same caliber. The bullpen in Memphis has been brought in some minor league guys. Minor league veterans hasn't worked out. The few guys that have pitched well, they brought up to St. Louis. And, you look at the bullpen right now in Memphis, the only two guys that are on the 40-man roster are Leone and Helsley. And they're Helsley, and those are the guys that are just back and forth. There really aren't a lot of players to choose from right now.
Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And Brian, we were just talking last segment about an absolute stud, an MVP quality talent. And I said to Ronj, I think if that guy arrives on the scene, he's not going to arrive from outside the organization. He's going to come from inside the organization. I want you to tell us about the Cardinals' top two guys, Gorman and Carlson. What sorts of talents are they?
Well, Nolan Gorman, of course, the Cardinals' first rounder last year, a teenager from Arizona, third baseman, second power potential. Now, his carrying tool is going to be his bat, and specifically his power. And he is now at High A Palm Beach. He started off very, very strongly at Peoria the first month, and then ran into a tough stretch. The Cardinals went ahead and promoted him at mid-year anyway. And now he's at Palm Beach, and he's had some good stretches, and he's had some rough stretches. Had a little trouble with the strikeouts. He's not as consistent yet as he needs to be, but both of them got invited to the Futures game, and it was a very valid choice for both. Dylan Carlson, a year older, drafted a year sooner, but is also at AA. And Carlson's an outfielder. He had always been challenged at a higher level than his peers, so always one of the youngest players in his league. And this year in AA, Carlson has really stepped up. And he's among the Texas League leaders in a number of offensive categories. They include extra base hits, runs, total bases, and like a dozen different home runs, 16. So, Dylan Carlson's having a really, really nice year with Double A Springfield. And of course, the temptation when guys get to Double A is, gee, you know, how close are they to St. Louis? Are they ready? Are they ready? And, you know, I think in the case of Dylan Carlson, they're going to let him continue to develop and, you know, maybe finally let him have the kind of year where he can be, you know, can be really a true standout in his league versus a young player who did okay, but, you know, didn't really put up the huge numbers.
Going back to Gorman for just a moment, who with Palm Beach right now, he struck out about a third of the time, a little bit less than a third of the time in his plate appearances. He's only walked four times, however, and that's obviously one of the things they want him to get better at. Is there something else, or is there a way they want him to get to that point where he is seeing the ball a little bit better?
Well, he's just got to be more selective. As you said, you know, strikeouts and walks are... You watch very closely. You'd like to see him bring the strikeouts down. You'd like to see him bring the walks up. And, you know, what we've seen so far, and it's very limited time because, I mean, he's only been a professional for 13 months now. So, you know, we don't have a lot to go on. It seems like when he truly tries to work on cutting down his strikeouts, the power kind of disappears. You know, while he's got, I think, something like 16 home runs for the season, most of them were in the first month of the year. And then, you know, he kind of quieted down. So, again, a young player, but he'll go through stretches. I think last week he had a stretch in three games where he had something like seven hits and four runs driven in, but then he went 3 for 15 the next few games right after that. So, again, it's just a young player. You got to be patient with him. But I think, you know, if he can hit well in Palm Beach and those big ballparks of the Florida State League, I think that will certainly be a positive next season when you would expect, you know, he'll be the guy at Springfield. And those Texas League ballparks, Texas, you know, is traditionally a better hitter's league. So, you know, he's on track to be age 20, which is a
Brian Walton from the Cardinal Nation is with us on 101 ESPN. And Brian, a lot of Cardinal fans want to see Randy Arozarena brought up to play center field here. How close is he?
You know, Randy Arozarena, it's interesting that the Cardinals outfielders, you know, Adolis Garcia was the guy who was hot last July, had all the power numbers in Memphis. They brought him up, really didn't do much. Just because they acquired in the
mostly all the time. We're having some trouble. We'll put Brian on hold, try to get a better line with him. He was mentioning the player that was acquired along with Cabrera, Genesis Cabrera, Justin, the left-handed hitting outfielder.
Williams.
Yeah. He's hurt, and then obviously Lane Thomas. So we'll get back to who is hot and who's not among the Cardinal outfielders. And the guy you'd like to have is Oscar Mercado right now, who's playing well, but
not here.
He's not available to the Cardinals at the moment.
I wonder if he's ever going to be available to them.
I doubt it.
That ship has sailed, you think?
Yeah. Brian is back with us. Brian, you were mentioning Lane Thomas and some of the other young outfielders who have been regarded by us as fans and as of observers as being guys that were the hot guy.
That's right. Lane Thomas is a center fielder by trade, led the system in home runs last year, but this year has been hurt a little bit. And there was an interesting tell recently when St. Louis directed Memphis to play Arozarena in center field and move Thomas over to left. So I think they're clearly what they were looking to see is, you know, can Randy handle center field on a day-to-day basis? Because he's had a tremendously hot bat. He went down to Springfield after being injured and, you know, completely tore up the Texas League. But the difference is this time he came up to Memphis, whereas last year he struggled. This year he's continuing to hit well in the Pacific Coast League. And Randy Arozarena is a more balanced player than Adolis Garcia, for example. He's got some power, but he can also run. He can play center field. So, you know, he's a good all-around player. He's, you know, not going to be the defender that Harrison Bader is, but, you know, he's got a nice bat. And the only issue is he's not on the roster yet, and we've got Williams and Thomas already on the roster. You know, they would have to do some swing around to get him in the mix.
Is that really the only hang-up that's preventing them from getting him up is his 40-man roster status?
Well, I think they haven't yet decided that Harrison Bader should go down and work on his offense. You know, if you bring up a guy like Arozarena, you want him to play. And right now, there's nowhere for him to play, and Marcelo Ozuna's, you know, probably not too far away from coming back. So, you know, what you don't want to do with a young player like Arozarena is bring him up and give him, you know, so right now they don't have a place to play him.
One other question for you. You mentioned Justin Williams, who the Cardinals got from Tampa last year in the Tommy Pham trade, and he's been hurt a lot. What sort of a prospect is he? Is he considered a high-level type guy, a journeyman? What do they have in Justin Williams?
Well, Justin Williams had made his major league debut with the Rays right before the trade with St. Louis. So, you know, he had worked his way to the majors. He was considered a good power prospect, had not yet shown the power that was expected of him. But one of the things that appealed to the Cardinals was he's a left-handed bat. And as we know, the Cardinals are, you know, predominantly a right-handed hitting team. But he broke his hand over the winter in an off-field action that you would say wasn't very mature. And he's just struggled to come back. He's been on the injured list, I think two or three times already. He's on the injured list at Memphis right now. So this is pretty much shaping up to be a lost season for Justin Williams.
Meanwhile, Giovanni Gallegos has been really good for the Cardinals. He had a terrific inning in two-thirds in yesterday's game, punching out four of the five hitters he faced, getting him out of a bases-loaded jam at one point. Do you see that for him, that he's pretty much here to stay and there's not a chance of him going back down?
Well, you never say never because he has minor league options, but the fact is he's an older player. He's 27, maybe 28, has a lot of maturity, has a lot of experience, obviously doesn't get rattled in tough situations, and has shown that he can handle the job at the major league level. And, you know, I would be very surprised to see him go down. But let's face it, John Brebbia has been darn good, too, and he got sent down six different times last season because of the fact he had minor league options, and when they needed to juggle guys around, he was the name that got called. But right now, I think Gallegos is in a situation where he's going to earn more and more valuable, important innings. I think it would be very surprising if he got sent down.
Brian, great stuff. Terrific information. We appreciate you taking some time. We'll have to do this again sometime soon.
Anytime.
Thank you, Brian. Brian Walton of The Cardinal Nation. Check out that website, thecardinalnation.com. And, of course, you can follow Brian on Twitter. And he does a weekly segment with Dan McLaughlin at scoopswithdannymac.com. So you can check out Dan's fine website as well.
So I do think that you're probably right when it comes to the Cardinals finding their next superstar. And it's going to have to be somebody down there. It's going to have to be somebody they draft or they sign internationally or whatever. Because
you know what? They can just bring up Louis Robber.
Randy?
Yeah.
They didn't sign him.
Oh, they told me they were.
Well, $50 million seemed to be a lot for a guy who's got like a 1,300 OPS right now.
Oh, man.
From what I understand. Just didn't know. You can't project how good he's going to be, even though.
Somebody else did.
We really wanted him.
Yeah, we did. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, the Cardinals are playing in Pittsburgh tonight, and we are going to talk a little NFL next. The Odell Beckham saga continues, one of the premier athletes in the NFL, but things got so bad in New York, it almost forced him to walk away from the game. That's next on 101 ESPN. That's ESPN's Tim Hasselbeck talking about Odell Beckham Jr. and his interview with GQ magazine about his time with the Giants before he got traded to Cleveland. Beckham said, "My initial reaction was not disappointment. I felt disrespected, like after everything I've done for them. This is me being honest. The team has not been good for the last 6 years, period. Even the year we went to the playoffs and everyone was talking about this and that, and we went there and I didn't have a great playoff game. Don't get me wrong, I had a terrible game, but I left the game with seven targets and I'm supposed to be your number one receiver. I left the game with seven targets. We lost. They scored 40 points. It's just all bad." He went on to say, "I felt disrespected because I felt like I was a main reason at keeping that brand alive. They were getting primetime games still as a 5-11 team. Why? Because people want to see the show. You want to see me play. That's just real rap. I'm not sitting here like it's because of me, but let's just be real. That's what we're why we're still getting primetime games. I felt disrespected. They weren't even man enough to even sit me down to my face and tell me what's going on." All due respect to Odell Beckham Jr., I don't know that he understands television and market size, but every time the Giants have been bad, they get primetime games because the Giants are a team that is, and they're a heritage team in the number one market. They'll get primetime games without Odell Beckham Jr. They'll get primetime games with Dave Brown as their quarterback because they are the New York Football Giants.
I agree with that to an extent, but I also think there's more intrigue when he is playing. Because look at the teams they were putting out there. I mean, Saquon Barkley's fun to watch. He's really good. But Eli Manning is a shell of himself. He's not even close to the guy he was 5 years ago. Beckham was the show. He was the star of that team. And yeah,
he's their most marketable guy, but there's absolutely no chance that he was the reason that New York was getting primetime games.
But if they're bad enough, though, Randy, they're not going to keep putting them on.
Yeah, they do. They have for 40 years since I've been watching, 50 years since I've been watching the NFL. They always get primetime games.
I wonder if it's different now, though. Because
they were horrible in 1983. They came here, played against the Cardinals in what a lot of people think is the worst Monday night game in the history of the league. And they got that primetime game on the heels of a 4-12 season.
I bet they lose a little bit of that now, it being modern times when there's so much diversification of media that people can do other things if they don't want to watch football. You do not have to watch football anymore if you want something to do because it's the only thing on TV. It's not anymore. So I think you have to add, just because it's a New York market, if it's a really bad team, if they're bad for like 10 straight years, they're not going to get that many primetime games. I do think he adds a little bit to it and a little bit of incentive to put those guys on TV because everybody's got Odell Beckham or trying to put him on their fantasy team. Yeah. So there's a reason to watch him.
He says he was so bothered that he thought about retiring. He said, 24 years old, just off it. To love something so much to a place where it is my everything and to watch it be tainted or all kinds of things, be in the middle of it, like, it hurt me to my soul. It'd be like loving someone and putting them on such a level to where life is about them and you love that person through anything, through the good, the bad, and to watch them do something so heinous and vulgar, something just so, like, almost unforgivable. You still love them, but it's like, wow. He said that. Now, I don't know if he talks in the article about their reaction to him being photographed in a bed with cocaine and a young woman. I don't know that he's talking about that. I don't think that he is blameless in the way the Giants felt about him.
No, he's obviously a dramatic guy. And that's going to follow him wherever he goes because that's just the personality he has. But one of the arguments he did make is talking about Tom Brady, which I'm sure upset people, especially in Boston, saying, look, he is animated. When he's upset, he's yelling at officials. He's yelling at coaches on the sideline. So why is it me who gets all the attention? And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he's right about that. Tom Brady can get away with that stuff, and nobody says a word about it. But when he does it, he's dramatic and he's emotional and whatnot. But I don't know. I don't think ultimately he's going to be a problem for the Browns because let's look at it this way. What is a problem for them? They've been bad for so long. What does it matter? It's not like they've got this really great thing going and now they're injecting Odell Beckham Jr. into the mix and he's suddenly going to turn them into a losing team. If anything, he's going to help them. And I think that's really what the bottom line is. Is he going to help them more than he hurts them? And I think the answer is yes.
Now, Field Yates of ESPN said that there is something to what he says, and there's an interesting reason for it.
Drama has been a part of the narrative with Odell Beckham Jr., and it seems like even at times when the most obvious thing to do was simply avoid, Odell instead engaged, whether it was taking the bait with Josh Norman in that infamous game a few years back between the Giants and the Carolina Panthers, whether it was the kicking net, whether it was a few other instances on the field. And Odell also strikes me as the kind of person that sometimes thrives with an edge. He almost needs something to sort of be flickering, a little light flickering in his mind that kind of gives him or kicks him into another gear. So I don't necessarily think that the drama will always be a negative for him, but I think it's going to be something that is going to be there.
It'll be interesting to see if it winds up being an issue with Baker Mayfield and a young coach like Freddie Kitchens in a market like Cleveland.
Well, Baker's a dramatic guy, too. For different reasons. He finds himself being talked about a lot for stuff he does off the field or antics of his. I think it's the same sort of thing. So I don't know. Odell Beckham Jr. certainly is a dramatic player. I think we all know that. I don't think it's exclusive to just him. I think there are a lot of guys in football and in sports who are like that, who need what Field is talking about here. you need to think nobody believes in you in order to be good. And how many times do we hear that from athletes in all sports that nobody thought we could do this? Nobody thought we could come back and win this game. Nobody thought I was going to be any good. They need that inside them to drive them to be better. Hey, whatever you have to do to talk yourself into being a better player, then I guess go ahead and do it.
Now, at this point, the Browns are tied with the Bears with the fifth best odds of winning the Super Bowl. James Holzhauser was interviewed by Peter King for Football Morning in America. Holzhauser, the professional gambler that won so much money on Jeopardy. He said, if you're looking to invest in a futures ticket, I would say the big thing to avoid is look away from the teams that have all the hype surrounding them. I can't believe we live in a world where the Cleveland Browns are the most hyped team in the preseason, but I would say they're probably the single worst bet to win the Super Bowl right now. That's a guy who's making six figures gambling on sports.
Well, worst bet in terms of the amount of hype versus what they're probably actually going to do, and I would agree with that. It's not that they have the lowest chances of winning the Super Bowl. He just understands how people are going to bet, and they're going to bet with their hearts there. But there's no way the Bears aren't just way better than the
Browns
are.
No doubt about that.
They've got to be.
You got your Mitchell guy.
Hey, MVP this season. Mm-hmm. That's a good bet for MVP. That's got value.
MVT maybe. Maybe his middle name is Vance. Mitchell Vance Trubisky.
I should have drafted Mahomes.
Next up in the Fast Lane, if you love fun and creative foods, we've got one you may want to try. That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.